Hello and welcome to episode the 243rd of the internet's one and only podcast about comic books. You're listening to the Comics Podcast. I promise we are not going to talk about any cartoon tits this week. That was
you don't know that.
Last week thing. I
have to close so many of my web browsers now.
So, you know, look forward to a great show. I'm your host, Jean-Luc, and I'm joined by the full cast of the Comics Podcast. Alex is here.
Hello, hello, hello.
Emily's here.
Hello.
And Chad is here.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. How's it going?
Can't complain.
Doing all right.
Good. Glad to hear it. Ready to talk about some fucking comic books?
I mean, not for at least half an hour.
I was going to say, yeah, in like 20 minutes, maybe. We're with like some weirdo who wants to talk about them right away.
Fair enough. What do you want to talk about then?
Honestly, I got fucking nothing.
I did something cool.
Not a lot of good you do.
I did something cool.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, kind of cool. John, do you like the band Say Anything?
Eh.
Okay, well, that's fine.
Eight years ago I did, but they're not one of the ones that stuck with me.
Okay, I can see that. Well, Say Anything, even though I'm not really as into them as I used to be, like, is one of those, like, very close to my heart bands. And I found out that this week that Max Bemis was going to be doing a live stream acoustic set playing through the songs on Say Anything's self-titled album, which is an album that I like a lot for very personal reasons. And he was also going to be playing some other songs. So I bought a ticket, which was like $20. And I watched that last night and I had an emotional experience and it was fun.
Emily cried. What else is new?
Yeah, I know. What else is fucking new? But
I was kind of wondering why you had posted a Say Anything lyric last night on Twitter.
That would be why.
So that kind of checks out now.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was good. The performance was really good. He played a couple songs from like their debut album, which like totally, I love the deep cuts, and I had a great time. It made me realize how much I miss seeing performances of music live, because like it simulated the experience of being at a very small show, and I enjoyed that, and it was so crazy hearing live music like while laying on my couch, but I enjoyed it. I had a great time.
Cool.
Nice. Yeah. I've done a couple of those since the pandemic started, and they've been good, but, like, I don't know if any of them have had that experience that you had where they made me, like, feel like I was, you know, at a show. They were all good, but, like, not anywhere near.
It was a very intimate vibe that I liked. I thought it was very chill, and I had not gone to any concerts I had not gone to very many like live performance type things in 2019, and then I definitely didn't do any in 2020. So it's just like, I've just been really, like, my heart has been hurting for getting to see, like, a band perform, and I hadn't really thought about it as much until I realized that this was something I missed very dearly.
For sure. Yeah, no, that's totally fair. I started getting emails about a few of my concert tickets getting rescheduled, and I'm very excited because, I don't know, seems like maybe by the time September and October and November roll around, going to concerts might be a safe thing to do again.
Well, so, in 2 weeks, I will be fully inoculated against COVID-19 because
that's exciting.
I got my second shot on Thursday, which
I thought that's where you were. I thought that's where you were going when you said you did something exciting this week.
That was the other exciting thing.
Your first shot of the COVID vaccine.
Second shot. I already had the first shot.
Wait, so why is it 2 weeks? Oh, because
there's the waiting period. You have to be responsible.
Yeah. Oh.
But yeah, I got the I got the Pfizer vaccine and no side effects so far. So
that's good.
No superpowers. I haven't developed autism. So, you know, like all of this, I feel like is a win-win.
Speaking of autism, do you want to talk about anime?
Listeners, I don't co-sign that statement. There's nothing wrong with autism. There are things wrong with anime, but surprisingly, Yashahime was good this week.
I gotta laugh out of Jean-Luc, so I'm gonna keep that one in.
I didn't expect that you were gonna edit it out either way.
I mean, it was 60-40.
Yeah, so you didn't hate Yashahime this week. Tell me about that, Chad.
No, it was a good episode this week. Like, once again, it's almost as if there's a story and it's progressing and it involves the characters and battling like both inner and external turmoils. And why didn't they start with some of this? I know I sound like a broken record, but this anime has been so weird. But I really had a lot of fun with this episode. I mean, Toshomaru showed up for a bit. The guy that made Inuyasha's sword showed up for a bit. And I was like, yay, I like that guy. My brain is lighting up with the nostalgia. We could do more of this. I don't know why Moroku keeps showing up, but he does. It was a fun kind of like, like finding out Mahara knows how to sharpen weapons is kind of cool. Like, that's a cool skill really she has. That's cute. Marketable.
I and love it was, that yeah, it was scene. Really cute. It was really good.
And then, Setsuna like going kind of demon blood crazy and just blowing shit up was fun. Like, and it's that's like peak Inuyasha stuff. Like, he did that a handful of times in the anime. Mm-hmm. We've seen Mahara do that. I'm guessing Toa will do that at least once before the series is over. It's just what happens in this show. Yeah, it was good. It's drama. I like Kirin Maru's girlfriend. She's dangerous and witchy, and like, it's cool to see her do stuff other than kind of just talk.
Is that not Kirin Maru's sister? Did she not say sister. Older sister?
Sorry, it's an anime. I just assumed.
Chad!
They can be both things in anime.
Chad! Anyway.
Will you co-sign that joke?
Anyway, we already watched Utena. yeah, I liked this episode. My favorite part of this episode was probably the moment that we cut to Sesshomaru and he's like, there's a change in the wind. It's like, no shit, your daughter's freaking the fuck out and you have not done anything to help train her with her demon powers. Like, so you're just gonna stand there and be like, some shit's going down. Not gonna let that ruin my day.
I have to wonder what he does all day. Because it just seems like he wanders just in a random direction.
Sesshomaru, what are you doing? You're not taking care of your wife. You're not taking care of your kids. What are you up to?
Also, what the hell is Zero's connection with Rin? Because that was interesting when she said, like, if she dies, a bunch of people die. And it, like, flashes to her. And it's like, see, this is the kind of shit I wanted earlier because it's interesting. Like, fuck.
Yeah, I have no idea. I guess we're going to find out. Or
we're
we won't.
Getting a season two of this, right?
Like, yeah.
You have to be. There's no way.
It would be weird if it didn't. I have no gauge on how popular it is because I just, none of the people that are in my, like, friend group are people that would be watching this. So, like, I have no idea how to gauge how well it is doing viewership-wise, but I feel like it would be weird if it didn't get a season two.
I mean, they're setting up a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. and I'm sorry we're still talking about this, Jean-Luc, but, like, all of them are going to get new weapons at some point.
Yeah.
Then we had the time travel thing at the end, where some unnamed bad guy is being creepy in the present day to Toa's family. Like,
well, that was Toa's
teacher.
There's just a lot
of shit going on now. Is that his teacher?
That was Toa's teacher. I don't know what version that you watched, but my subtitles indicated that was Toa's teacher.
Oh, I thought it said, he had Kagome's last name.
No,
Higurashi, which is like her adopted family.
They mentioned, the dad was there.
Okay.
But, yeah, the guy, the one with the long hair and the glasses is Toa's teacher. Can I tell you, the moment that we saw an airplane, my brain broke a little bit because I did kind of forget about the modern day aspect of this TV show because we've been stuck in feudal Japan for so long.
I don't know how you can when Toa dresses from modern world like Kagome did.
I'm just accustomed to Toa dressing like that, so it just doesn't
even... At least she wears pants.
It doesn't even faze me. But just seeing, like, a modern technology, because it's not like she's constantly using her phone. Like, she's brought it up before, but it's not like... Like,
sure.
Technology and stuff doesn't really factor into the show that much. So seeing an airplane just kind of, like, fucked with my brain for a second. But then I remembered that there was, in fact, the modern world aspect to the show.
Yeah, it was a good episode this time. I really enjoyed it. And I'm hoping the next couple I enjoy, and then once it's over, I will watch something else until season 2 comes out. and then I'll probably hate watch that, because let's be real, like, I haven't enjoyed that many episodes of the 20-some we've seen.
No, that's true. You've disliked almost all of these, like, statistically.
Like 70%.
I would say 80 even, but you were being generous and you said 70. Can I say one more thing about an anime and then we can move on?
Yes.
Okay, so I have mentioned on the show previously, but not in a long time because it's not relevant to anybody else, but one of my favorite series, Higurashi no Nakakoroni, got a reboot this year, and it seemed like it was just going to be a remake, but then it turned out that it was like a semi-continuation, and it's been really good up until this past week, which they put out a dog shit episode that made me so... frustrated and mad, and I'm not going to give any details. I just want everybody to know that I'm angry about anime on the internet. So business as usual. Approve.
Speaking of, okay, anime talk is over, so Jean-Luc, Alex, you can come back. I want to talk about Twitter real quick.
Oh boy.
Because I've been enjoying Twitter, and I found a thing to follow called Hourly Cats 1998,
yes!
And just every hour... it tweets out a line from Cats the Musical.
Yeah, because I started following that account recently, and I've been retweeting lines that I like.
And I've been doing that as well, and it has made Twitter just so much better. Like, I log in, and there's just, like, 10 in a row, and I get to read these stupid out-of-context tweets about the Cats the Musical. And sometimes they're just, like, random bagpipe solo. Like, it won't even be words. It'll just be, like, maybe something from the script
it's
that's
great.
Worded stupid. It's fucking great. And I think I found one for SpongeBob, but it's only once a day instead of every hour.
Oh, that's what
but
you
that's
meant
cool too.
About SpongeBob. I was so confused as to what you were talking about when you said that. So now that makes sense.
So yeah, like, it turns out you can have fun with Twitter, assuming, you know, you're not a complete moron with it. It's not that hard. This is an easy thing to do and use. So I'm enjoying Twitter. Till I scroll down and someone said the Dark Souls games get worse with everyone, and it's like, ah, Dark Souls 3 was pretty good. I think that's a bad take. But I don't care enough to respond, because I'm a fucking adult.
Yeah, it can be possible to tailor your Twitter experience to not be miserable.
Yay.
Most people don't, but it is possible. It really... involves just very carefully picking who you follow, and so far Chad seems to only follow me and the Hourly Cats Twitter account.
I mean, that's kind of it.
Damn, Chad doesn't even follow us.
It's great.
I believe that, Chad, you said specifically the only time you ever see any dumb shit on Twitter is when it has come from Jean-Luc.
I don't want to completely own up to that because he's here, like, in spirit. But it is the only time I find anything political.
Well, that's like all I post about.
I know, so. You should stop that.
Yeah.
It's his
job.
What's more
about Mountain Dew?
You can unfollow me if you don't want to see it.
Like, I don't want to unfollow you, you're my friend.
You could mute him.
You can mute me.
I've got...
There are
plenty of mutuals that I have that I know have me muted. I know... in my heart of hearts, I can tell that they have me muted. And you know what?
I mean, every other day you talk about Warrior Cats or Utenut or both. So, I mean, I kind
of
get it.
I don't blame them because I talk about a lot of dumb shit. And I don't, like, I know that people don't want to see that. But I can't stop posting. I have posting disease and it's terminal.
How do you mute someone on Twitter?
You can go to their profile and, hold on. I don't remember what the exact. Okay. So you have to click like the little menu towards like the up right hand corner. And there'll be like a menu that pops up and there's an option that says mute and you can just mute them so you don't see anything that they post. You can alternatively, you can turn off retweets so you just don't see the things that they have retweeted. But like you can just make it to where you're still following somebody, but you don't see any of their posts. So Jean-Luc and Alex, you can make it so you don't see all of my warrior cats tweeting, and you're welcome.
Wow, you were not the person I just muted. Your unfiltered tweets bring joy.
Thank you.
I'm not a coward. If I don't want to see someone's posts, I unfollow them.
Damn,
I'm a simple man.
It's true. A simple man who played Apex Legends on the Nintendo Switch this week, Jean-Luc.
Yeah, I've installed that dog shit.
Well, that's how you really feel.
Yeah, it's
dude, I can look. I have two options. I can play Apex Legends on a small screen at 30 FPS with dog shit textures, and none of my unlocks carry over from the game. Or I can play Apex Legends on 100+ frames with quality textures and all of my unlocks.
But you can't play it in your bed. You can't be under your covers with your Switch Lite over your head and just walking around that good old map. I guess you could. You could probably put your computer in your bed, but it's a lot easier with a Nintendo Switch.
It is a lot easier with a Nintendo Switch. That is true. But I would prefer not to play Apex Legends on my Nintendo Switch. That's not the kind of experience I'm necessarily looking to have on that platform.
Yeah, I played a few games playing with Jean-Luc on the computer and our friend Ryan, who's also on computer. So I was matched. We were matched up against other teams who were on PC and console. So a bit of a mix. And Ryan and Jean-Luc, it was like four games in a row where they would trade. So they would kill like a person on the other team each, and there'd be one person left, and it'd be up to me. And I'd be like, I'm like looking at the ceiling, like where are they? What? Huh? And then every time we lost. So. It's hard to play crossplay on a Nintendo Switch to go up against people who are on a PC and can see things and such. But if you're playing against other Nintendo Switch people, they don't know what they're doing either, or they can't see what they're doing either, which was actually somewhat enjoyable. But I'm never playing this again after the review's done, so there's that.
And thank God for that.
But in happier news, have any of you played Heroes of the Storm
before?
I've
heard of it.
What? I
heard Cameron talk about it.
Why? Where is this going?
Well, Heroes of the Storm is a game that...
Are you playing Heroes of the Storm?
That friend of the show, Cameron, plays, and me and him played it earlier this week, and I actually had a lot of fun.
That game?
Well, because I've always wanted to, like I've tried to get into League of Legends a couple of times, and just,
but
like...
Why, though?
Spend, like, 2 days playing.
Again,
The K-pop is free... Alex, you don't have to play League of Legends to listen to the music.
I can't buy the KDA chair until I play League of Legends for at least 100 hours. That's the law, Chad. I can't spend $800 on the chair until I do that. But I like the idea of it, but every time I play League of Legends, it's a miserable, miserable, miserable time. And then Cameron mentioned Heroes of the Storm, or I heard that he was playing it, so I was like, oh, I'll give it a try. And I thought that game died 2 years ago. But it's got like 12 Overwatch heroes and a huge roster, and it's lots of fun. And there was like a new hero added 2 months ago, and queue times are shorter than Overwatch. And I had a lovely time, and I'm like Blizzard hasn't talked about this.
To be fair, Overwatch also died 2 years ago, so kind of it's not really a good comparison.
Well, I would retort with something, but honestly, there's nothing to retort. But the thing is that Heroes of the Storm has gotten heroes far like. Look at Overwatch, look at Heroes of the Storm. That one of the games is like, oh, Blizzard's like, yeah, we love, you know, Overwatch. Overwatch 2's coming out, very important. Great, great, great. And Heroes of the Storm is the game that 2 years ago they were like, yeah, we're going to stop with the esports. We're going to sort of scale this game back. They got a new hero 2 months ago, and they've gotten steady heroes for the last 2 years. Overwatch's last hero was like over a year ago, and
well,
I don't know.
We stopped playing, and Blizzard's like, shit, those are the only people we really cared about. It really revolves
around
us.
Yeah. they just loved reading the chat logs and laughing and being like, "Oh, this is wonderful. This is pure comedy, pure comedy." But Heroes of the Storm is fun, and I think it's a game that isn't successful enough for Blizzard to be like, "It's successful. Here we go. We're putting a lot of money into it." But there's enough people playing that they can't shut it down entirely, and I think they're kind of angry about it because they just do not advertise it. Like if you go to the Blizzard launcher, it's like Overwatch, World of Warcraft, Diablo. There's like a mini game collection, and then you have to like open all games and scroll to the bottom, and there's Heroes of the Storm.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's really strange, but I had lots of fun playing, and hopefully play some more with Cameron this week because it was cool. And the Overwatch characters are like brought over really well with their ults and abilities. And then there's just the Murloc character who has like terrible health, but he can like freeze people in their place, and he's just there to sort of troll other players, and which was just lots of fun. So. I never expected to be into Heroes of the Storm because I thought the game
Cameron's
was
dead. A dangerous person to but game with because he'll make you play stuff you never thought you would, and all of a sudden you got a couple hours into Space Station 13.
Oh man, I remember that week. That was yes. What a complicated game.
Or you do what we did in VR chat last week, and we spent like an hour just dressing up as anime girls and trying to find all the clues in this Legend of Zelda themed map.
It was really funny and really cute. Like I gave up looking for the anime avatars, like, I don't know, 30 minutes before you and Joe did, and I was just sitting there talking to Cameron, and you guys would come back into the main shop every, like, 10 minutes and be like, "We found another one. Oh, here's one here. What could this clue mean? Where could it be? There's supposed to be 27. I'm reading the wiki." And it was just wonderful to experience that.
I lost myself a little. I got frustrated, and I ended up looking up a guide after the fact because I didn't want that stupid map to win.
The fact that there's a guide for a VR chat world in which you unlock like 27 anime girl avatars is just...
Yeah. I found a cute one though, so I'm keeping that one.
Yay! Another fine addition to your collection.
Goes right next to Buff Pikachu, Luna, and the tumor monster.
Hey, so John has left and said BRB. So Alex, how is your Naruto journey going?
Ooh, I'm sort of going slowly, watching like a couple episodes a week, except I watched more
last time
last
that
night.
We talked to you, I believe that you were in the Chunin exams. I don't know anything about Naruto, but I know some key phrases.
That is a key phrase. So basically, the coup failed. It kind of failed because like the leader, the third Hokage, is dead. He got killed by Orochimaru, but then he like took Orochimaru's hands, so like his hands don't work, and which means he can't do any sort of bending, or no, that's Avatar, whatever, bending, we'll call it bending. He can't bend anymore, and now it's like that's done, and we're like, what's next? And now Sasuke's brother is in town, and he's one bad SOB, that Sasuke's brother, and
Uchihas ain't fucking around.
Yeah, but now Naruto and the Pervy Sage are hanging out together, so yeah.
Oh yeah, Naruto gets to learn a pretty cool attack within the next dozen episodes or
so. He hasn't learned it yet, but he's excited to learn new things right now. But he's also about to die to Sasuke's brother, so I don't know why I don't think the show is going to continue past the next episode, because that's where the cliffhanger showed. So, very exciting. I'm enjoying going through Naruto slowly, but I will not talk any more about anime, and I'm not sure if Jean-Luc's back, but hello, Jean-Luc? He's not back.
Hello?
All right, more anime then.
Oh, there you go. Never mind. God damn it.
How's your week going, Jean?
Sorry?
How is your week going?
Oh. I don't know. I have nothing to report on other than reading comics.
I thought you were going to give us some rundown of blockchain shit.
Well, that's
black and white statue.
That's comics related. Yeah,
that's really sad that that's comics related.
It's fucking depressing.
Problem.
Yeah.
Should we use that to get into comics? We're at 25 minutes, and I have a feeling this is going to go a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's topical to talk about DC's NFT shit. Where they are...
I'm so glad that you were bringing this up, because if you didn't, I was going to.
Well, it's just fucking... Dude, like, man, I had a Discord call yesterday with Alex and one of our other friends where I said some things that I probably can't say on something that's going out into the public about people involved in the production and selling of NFTs and cryptocurrency more generally. But I don't know. Like, I just think that, like, when... It's so pertinent. Like, we talk about DC. We shit on DC Comics a lot. This is an especially important thing to shit on DC Comics about, which is that they're selling NFTs for, you know, expensive, not super expensive prices, not like some of the other NFT sales, but what basically amount to JPEGs of fucking Batman black and white statues.
Jean-Luc, what's an NFT? And,
oh, okay, God.
It's so a way for rich people to launder money.
Yeah, more or less. So an NFT is a non-fungible token, which is a form of cryptocurrency. Basically, the way that cryptocurrency is basically, it's a secure form of currency that isn't backed up by any, like, state actor, like most currencies. Also, it's a little inaccurate to call them a currency because they're more like stocks than they are money. There's no Federal Reserve backing them up. You can't really use them to buy things. You can't really exchange them for goods and services or labor. But the real problem here, and there's two real problems, but the big one is that the production of NFTs and cryptocurrency more generally is incredibly energy intensive because it basically requires running these massive farms of incredibly powerful PCs doing ridiculously complex math equations over and over and over and over. That, like, literally you could not do them by hand. Like, you could not do them by hand in your lifetime, in a lifetime or in a reasonable time frame. Which just the output of energy and the waste of energy is just absurd. Like, it is essentially, one of my friends earlier this week, the way that he put it was that it's essentially rich Silicon Valley tech bros finding a way to monetize climate change. And the climate disaster,
womp, womp.
Which is entirely accurate. And it really just feels to me like not just when DC does it, they add an additional layer of shittiness, which is reminding creators that they own none of the shit that they produce for DC Comics. But more generally, like, it is just so infuriating, both because of the environmental impact, but also just because it feels like it is just like the most blatant example of the ruling class, the moneyed interests, just like fucking spitting in the face of everyone else because it is so fucking useless.
Yeah.
They're literally paying tens of thousands of dollars for JPEGs that output more energy in a day than most households do in like a year. And
I mean, a year is being generous. There have been instances where, like, the energy output has been akin to, like, a home operating for 50 years.
Right, yeah. Like, it's insane. And that's, you know, not even taking into account that, like, the average American household already wastes a shit ton of energy, already is not energy efficient, does not use energy responsibly. And now you take that and why it... you know, 50, 100, 100,000 degrees, and you end up with this. And it fucking infuriates me that
as DC
Comics, that DC Comics is into this.
And it's such a weird way of doing it. I mean, it's the first series they decide to do, and you're thinking, okay, like, if DC Comics is going to get into the NFT game, are they going to put key panels? Are they going to do, like, a Superman number one?
Coming soon!
You know, something that I would think. They did the fourth series Batman black and white statues. So these are real statues based on, you know, DC Comics art that you can buy in a store for basically the price of this digital thing. Like, it's depending on it. And it's not even like we're doing one copy of this one, we're doing two copies of this one. It's like, they're doing like 1,500 copies of this JPEG.
Guess what, motherfucker? Like, there's 1,501 copies of the JPEG because I fucking print screened it. Like, which is reductive. I know a lot of people have been saying that, and it is reductive, but it accomplishes the same goal, right? Like, people are buy NFTs in the hopes that, like, someday they'll be able to use it as a currency. But I got news for those people. There is no world in which any currency that is not backed up by a Federal Reserve, and in a lot of cases that is not backed up by, like, a fucking military force, is going to become something that is exchanged frequently for goods and services. That's just not how it works. And
that's the problem, right? Is when the world turns into Mad Max, Your picture of Batman won't be worth
it. It's not going to be worth shit.
If you have, like, four bullets,
yes,
you'll be able to buy a loaf of bread.
Dude, if you have four bullets, like, you'll be akin to a millionaire. Like, it's...
Or, like, imagine this, right? Emily, you, it's 20 years down the line, and you're running a very successful car dealership.
I love this fantasy.
I don't know why you're running a car dealership, but you're running a car dealership, you know, great life, fantastic, high roller, really nice car dealership. And some person walks up to you and you're like, you know, this car is like, let's say like $200,000, very nice car that you're selling at this car dealership of yours. And they walk up to you and they show you, and they show you sort of a receipt or like a thing. And they're like, yeah, you know what? I got Batman Black and White statue, series 4. I'd like to trade it in for this $200,000 car. Like, what, if someone ever tries to buy
something with
a Batman Black and White statue,
it's not like that would be akin to like bartering. I assume
that is literally what people want to use NFTs for.
Okay, maybe I guess I didn't fully understand like that aspect of it.
That is the reason that they go for so much money is because people plan to use them as a currency.
Okay.
Yeah. That makes more sense than what I thought.
And that makes kind of like this a thing even where, stupider than I thought.
Where they trade NFTs.
Yes.
NFTs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And currently, like, I mean, people are spending money on these NFTs. Like, there was a virtual Atari shoe that sold for what was it? I think it was $17,000. Yeah. That's $70,000 for a picture of an Atari shoe that doesn't exist because it only exists in this sort of NFT form. But currently it's not like they can actually use that shoe for anything. It's like a thing where like in the future I can barter this or I could trade this for other NFTs because there's like sort of a trading platform that there is, which is, you know, the looking at stocks and everything and be like, okay, like you own a part of it or you own this big thing and it's there and you're trading it. It's just so like when me, Jean-Luc and, Tamim were talking about this in the thing. It was just so depressing to talk about this, and like you read an article and you see how excited people are about NFTs, and it's just like it was just kind of soul crushing.
I can't wait till everything is desert.
Well, that's the direction we're headed in. Not to be.
I mean, Anakin loves sand, so it'll be great.
You do.
Yeah. Well, you want to talk about some of the actual products published by DC Comics, or? Oh.
I just want to say you did touch on it, but DC sent out a letter and be like, okay, guys, we're into NFTs now, so we're going to sue you if you try to make your own NFTs of DC Comics material. We're going to come for you.
Which, to be fair, any comic book creator who tries to sell NFTs should be totally shunned and ridiculed and laughed at, but DC using it as a reminder of like that they will enforce the United States' shitty IP laws, not good. Which, it's very funny that, you know, they love enforcing IP laws that are currently being used to prevent developing countries from getting access to the COVID-19 vaccines. We love our fucking... We love living in the Imperial Core, folks. We fucking love it.
Yay.
Womp womp.
And DC also had a line where they were like, we're going to be working with the artists because they're our partners in this NFT thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, are you going to give them? You going to give them some money, DC Comics? Are you going to... You're gonna give exposure, huh?
No.
But yeah, there are a lot of comics this week, folks.
There were. And none more prescient than James Tynion's Joker, number one.
I enjoyed the first four pages of this book.
Yeah?
And I was having so much fun telling my brother about this comic and being extremely, like, honest with what it's about. And it's being just, like, the dumbest thing ever when you say the plot out loud.
All right, say the plot out loud.
Let's go. Hit us.
Well, it starts off, like, with you know, young Jim Gordon. And he's talking to another police officer who's like, do you believe in evil? And he's like, yeah, of course I do. He's like, no, you don't. You're a kid. He's like, I was in Vietnam. He's like, yeah, but war evil isn't, like, real evil, which is in the city. When you see that evil, you gotta shoot it. And Jim's like, okay. And then it fast forward, exposition dumps about how the Joker is a really bad person and did bad things. And then kills a bunch of people and escapes Arkham again, to the point where they're like, wow, he did it again. And then a stranger basically kidnaps him and is like, I need you to go kill the Joker. And he's like, I'm not a hitman. And she's like, yeah, but do you believe in evil? And he's like, fuck, yes, I do. Kill the Joker.
Yeah, dude, that exposition dump really does go like, yo, y'all heard of this Joker guy?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, let us prove that the Joker is like a homicidal maniac. Look, he killed some people. He killed Bane. Oh, you guys like Bane, right? Killed him. Killed Bane. I know. It's crazy. This guy's not good. This guy's bad news. There's three of them, though. Check out Batman 3 Jokers by Jeff Johns, Jason Fabok. Good stuff.
Yeah.
It was a fun book to read. Like, and I love the line that Jean-Luc tweeted earlier this week about the person being all like, you know what? Billionaires aren't the monsters. The Jokers are the monsters.
Oh, yeah. That was a choice piece of writing.
To be fair, I don't really think that that is the message of the book. But it is like a really funny series of lines to read where she says, yeah, there are people who believe wealth is evil. You know what's really evil? The damn Joker, baby.
But it's like it's like such a like Jim Gordon is not like good in this book, because first he's like, oh my god, you're right, billionaires are good. Okay, the damn Joker's bad. And then this lady's like, I'm gonna give you $23 million to throw away your morals. And he's like, all right, when do we go? Let's go.
See,
let's
do it. I was kind of on board at the beginning. Like, I think that the scene in the bar is like kind of dumb, like it's kind of dumb, but like I think that like Tinian picked the right lens to do this, where it's a story about the Joker, but it's not actually like starring the Joker. The Joker is not like the protagonist of the story. Instead, it's like from the perspective of Jim Gordon. I'm like, oh, it's gonna be like, I got conned into thinking that we were getting like a spiritual successor to Gotham Central. Because I thought that it was going to be like Jim Gordon investigating the Joker and like, you know, investigating this crime. He's doing a hit. That's not the same thing.
Yeah, but
he's Liam Neeson.
You need to investigate.
Yeah, but it's not like he's doing
a particular set of skills.
He
can shoot evil in the head.
It's just going to be funny when Jim kills the Joker and this lady's like, that man killed someone. And then he goes to jail and doesn't get his $23 million. And then she's all like, I crossed my fingers.
Yeah.
That's how it's
going to be. I don't know. That whole, like, convincing him to kill the Joker scene is just really poorly done.
I kept waiting for them to tell me Batman's parents were dead.
It is, yeah.
That's issue two. You don't want to give away the farm in issue one.
Yeah. It's really not good.
It is not good at all.
It did kind of make me want to read James Tinian's run on Batman, because there's this thing going on in the background where apparently like all the like young people in Gotham City are doing Joker and Punchline cosplay now. Like they think they were all Joker-fied, I guess.
Speaking of Punchline.
That seems really funny. Yeah? You read that backup?
Hey, you know, we didn't read, I don't think we read, I didn't read Mirka Andolfo's second issue of you know, ongoing series. And she's a writer who we've been off again, on again, more interested in her art than not. But she was the artist.
Yeah. Was she? So. I didn't even.
Yep. It does not look like Mirka Andolfo. So I don't blame you for that.
I did not notice.
It is Mirka Andolfo.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I did kind of not hate the art, so maybe that's why.
Cover quote.
Absolutely.
Would you like
not
to own it in NFT form? Because we gotta.
My favorite part about Punchline is that they introduced a new character that's just Harley Quinn. Am I wrong in this assessment? She talks like Harley Quinn. She acts like Harley Quinn.
Well, yeah.
I feel like her first name should be Hawaiian.
Yeah, but she's like younger
and
hipper.
She could be Hawaiian Punchline.
Jesus Christ.
Womp womp.
I found our title.
I think the last two pages were good. I was like, oh, Harper Row. I remember that character. She's neat.
Yeah, I read the
new neat that she's still around, I guess.
All right. It's been a while.
Anyway, yeah. Joker number one. Did not joke.
Yeah,
better than
fair.
I expected.
Like,
I guess.
I totally
disagree
with that.
Yeah, I mean, more entertaining than I expected. And you know, I'll be back for issue two.
Okay. What about Wonder Woman number 770?
Well, there's a cartoon. There's
Adventures
a cartoon.
Of Billy and Mandy did it first.
They did, and they did it shorter, so. With music.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I enjoyed this, yeah.
You know, it was
like. I know that it doesn't sound very enthusiastic, but the conceit of, like, oh, Wonder Woman died or thinks she's dead or something, and she finds herself in Valhalla fighting, you know, endless hordes and drinking and making friends with a hot guy. And, like, maybe there's something else going on. There's a couple interstitial pages. Like, I don't know. Like, the conceit is good. It's not, like, groundbreaking, but it's good. And Becky Cloonan wrote it pretty well, which was a little bit surprising, considering her future state stuff. But, like, there's good dialogue in here. The characters, like, sound different. They don't speak in cringe. There's not, like, endless monologuing. There's, like, an actual mystery here of, like, oh, how is Wonder Woman in Valhalla? What's going on? Why is the world tree dying? That squirrel's really cute. Like, there's a good
I liked exposition. When Ratatusk was like, I'll scratch your back. You scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. And I was just like, oh, furry cringe.
I liked Ratatusk.
Yeah, I liked the part where he very clearly tried to kill, like, he very clearly left Siegfried for dead and is like, hey, I can help you. I'll do you a favor if you do me a favor. It's like, ah, nice. I see what kind of little fucking rat you are, you stupid little chipmunk.
Hey, he's a squirrel and he's adorable.
He is adorable. Yeah. I don't know, like, there's like the mystery. It's I don't want to, like, say it's groundbreaking or anything, but, like, it's a superhero comic with a compelling mystery and good dialogue, and that's way more than I've gotten used to asking for.
And the art's pretty good. Yeah, you know, it's there. Yeah.
Being said, everyone watch Kick in the Asgard, Grim Adventures Billy Mandy episode, where Billy goes to Valhalla, and it is that exact same version of Valhalla.
Yeah. 640 mark, and I'm like, oh, there's the issue. Wow. It's good. And it just kind of proves how strange the future state two shots were.
Yeah.
Because, like, telling a full story, getting people interested in something in two issues, and...
Yeah, see, this is the second first issue with the same creative team that I've, like, been like, oh, this is good, where I thought the future state stuff sucked, so...
The other one was the Swamp Thing by Rambi?
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I didn't think that one sucked, but it was not very good.
I thought it sucked, so...
Yeah. That's fair. It kind of sucked. but yeah, this was good. I'm gonna continue on with this for a little bit.
I might too. It was dumb, but it was fine.
Yeah, it is kind of dumb and, like, a little bit that the numbering's at like 774 again, and it's like, I don't know. I like seeing lower numbers, and it makes me feel like I'm actually, like, starting something new.
Yeah,
and it is a bit like, oh, it's a 774. Okay, hopping in.
Yeah, it is what it is. Whatever, man.
Numbers
don't matter. Did you all get around to reading Proctor Valley Road number one?
I did.
Yeah. It was good.
I read this book because I saw that it was a number one from Boom, and I'm like, I should read that. I'm gonna read the, you know, Luna number two anyway. Might as well read this. And I saw Grant Morrison's name, and I was like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. Let's fucking go, dude. This was, like, kind of like this is my standout this week, honestly.
I liked it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Same.
I'm glad. Yeah. It's very likable. It has, like, this, it's kind of, like, in the same, like, sort of nostalgia bait vein as, like, Stranger Things and It and stuff. It trades the 70s for the 80s, but it's like, and I guess nostalgia bait is such a weird term to describe this book specifically, because, like, yeah, like, they talk about, like, the music of the era, and they're wearing, like, clothes of the era, and they talk, you know, they do their best to emulate that, but that's not really, like, the book is not just riding on that alone, you know? And it's also not, like, uncritically taking place in the 70s.
Yeah, I,
like,
wouldn't call it nostalgia bait at all. It's just a period piece.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess, yeah, that's totally fair.
You cynical weirdo.
Yeah. I mean, I see anything with, like, five teens takes place sometime in the past, and I'm like, ah. Nostalgia bait. I go into these things with a degree of cynicism, and I maybe wrongfully. There's, like, a great scene in this where this guy explains what's like, this guy like goes on a tirade about the Vietnam War being bad and stuff like that. So it's definitely like a little bit more critical of that. And then it turns into a horror comic, which is pretty sick. I mean, I guess it, it sort of sets up that it's going to be a horror comic on like the first page, with like the cold open. But the entire sequence where the main characters are trying to scam these out of towners out of money so they can go to a concert, and they take them. Janis Joplin on this trip to be like, they take them out to like see the sights of the town. It's like, oh, we have this really scary tour of this, you know, old folklore, and it doesn't work. And the, you know, the people they're taking out had totally different expectations of what was going to happen. And then they all end up dead. It's very, very good.
I love the Bane cast.
Well, one of them,
they're all great. And they remind me I'm trying to think of, like, the cartoon they remind me of, but the idea of, like, oh my god, they might be dead, and the girl just be like, man, our fucking, you know, spook tour is great.
Yeah. You know, it's like, we're gonna get so, fantastic. We're gonna scam so many people out of money. Yeah.
It was like Ed, Edd n Eddy almost, like,
yeah,
but in the 70s and all girls instead of the three guys, like,
yep.
I don't know, I had a ton of fun with it, well done.
It's a book that I feel... didn't like it was interesting enough without having the twist, and it was cool to. I mean, it's not really a twist, right? Like, that's just sort of what the book is, but without the supernatural aspect. But it's nice to have that to sort of like bring these characters together. But they're it's just such a good job of creating a cast, and like one issue in, you like them. There's no exposition really. It's just like, hey, these people are living their lives. And it odds, you know, there's some.
Yeah, I was going to say it oddly, like, reminds me of the first issue of Homesick Pilots in the sense that, like, it just introduces you to this compelling cast of characters, and that's enough. And then it adds, like, this horror layer on top of it to, like, you know, add some conflict to the story. So.
This could be, like, a world ending threat thing, but the issue with most first issues when they have, like, you know, crazy stakes is they put the stakes at the beginning. It's like, this is the big battle, the big thing. And this, like, you get the characters, you get them right first. That's why Grant Morrison's been making fantastic comics for, like...
But here's the thing. This book has amazing stakes. I want those kids to go see Janis Joplin.
It's true.
Like, it does set up big stakes. Like, they want to go see Janis Joplin.
Likeable. They're so excited. Die.
Yeah.
And I love... Yeah. I think my favorite scene was when one of the girls flips off the lady and then throws the broom at her. And it's just like, it's just such a nice body language and likable characters.
Yeah.
It's only been one issue, guys. And this is wonderful. It's wonderful. Jeff Lemire is not the only person who can write first issues. So.
Now, speaking of first issues, did you guys read Carmen number one?
Yes,
I did.
Yeah. What'd you guys think of this one?
Dude, I saw so many titties. It was pretty sick.
A lot of titties.
Well, technically, you saw the same one.
Yeah, but in like different poses and shit.
Okay. Well. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, I liked some of the character design. I liked some of the visual stuff. I felt some of the writing and dialogue was maybe not as strong, but like,
yeah. I'll
read another issue.
Yeah. So it's written and drawn by Gillian March. So like. The art is predictably fantastic, but an important thing to know is that this wasn't originally written in English. It's originally written in Spanish and translated to English.
Okay.
Which, knowing that, I think if I hadn't known that going in, I would have prickled a lot more at some of the, like, some of the writing. Because some of it is...
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because it makes a lot more sense as a work in translation, because some of it is like weirdly stilted.
Yeah.
And they uses like words that like you wouldn't necessarily use in that context. To a degree you can sort of chalk it up to like, oh yeah, this is like this girl who just committed suicide being visited by, you know, the angel of death, right? It's a little weird. So you can sort of chalk it up to that, but it does. And I don't know. I'm not going to try to say that makes it like, oh, it's like, oh, you have to like say it's good, because you don't, because it's not, you know, there's a couple moments where it's not very good, but that is the, I think it's fair to say that is the reason why some of the writing might be a little clunky.
It's also it wasn't originally released in single issues.
It was originally released as a trade. Yep. And it's been broken into 5 issues for US release.
So I also felt that it sort of ended abruptly, and I feel like we didn't get enough time with the characters. Felt a little disjointed, but like it was somewhat engaging still in doing that. So when I said I didn't like it, it was more so like it felt a bit awkward, but knowing it's a trade, and then I don't know about the language thing, so that also sort of recolorizes it a bit.
I do think that even with that context, the first like 6 to 8 pages are kind of bad. it has a really rough start. There's a shitload of dialogue, which, okay, translation aside, there's still just too much. I don't actually like any of the characters until like the one commits suicide, and we get like, you know, the lady in the Angel of Death shows up. Like, she carries this a lot,
yeah.
And then her manner of speaking, obviously, a little weird. I think there's so many good ideas in this. The artwork is generally pretty good and interesting, and then there's just stuff in here I don't like at all. And I came away from this being like, I'm glad I read this, because not a lot like this out on the market right now, but also kind of a flawed piece of fiction.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to like characters when you barely get to know them, right?
Yeah.
It's just tough because of what the setup is, which is basically like you see this character who is the, you know, who is the character who ends up committing suicide, and you like check in with her at like when she's a kid, and then when she's in high school, and then when she's in college, like right before this happens. And it's like not a great way. Like, it's, you sort of get the sense that like her social life is a bit of a mess, and that she's very like codependent on this other character that they introduce. That's, and they're maybe drifting apart, but like there's, I think that there's not enough, there almost isn't enough setup. And I think that the issue almost might've been better. Like, and it's weird because it is being republished, but it almost would have been better served like opening on page 8 and then doing those flashbacks later on in the story. And it sort of depends on how, like, where the story goes from here and how it evolves, but it almost feels like the flow would be better if like you got to the context, if you didn't go in with any context and got that context later on, because as is, it feels really it just feels insufficient, you know, as the first issue. So, but I honestly had fun with it. I think that like the two characters have a really like build a really good rapport really quickly. It's, you know, it is obviously dealing with some serious subject matter, but it's very lighthearted about it, and not in a way that is like trivializing what's happening, but, you know, in a way that is like, oh, it's just enjoyable. There's some like good humor. Like these characters are just like very lighthearted young, like late teens, young adults in college. I don't know. It just has like, it has like, the character writing to me was pretty strong. Like, I was pretty into the characters. The concept, I don't really know where it's going. I don't have a good enough sense of that yet. But I thought that there's enough like solid dialogue here that makes me want to, you know, read more of it going forward.
That was a good way to remind us that we're at 57 minutes. So we have a handful of comics more to go. Yeah. Let's gun through a few so we can.
Sure. Homesick Pilots number 4.
This is a rough issue.
Yeah, not my favorite issue of Homesick Pilots.
Feels like he's kind of losing focus.
A little bit. I mean, there's some stuff in here I like. I like that they are bringing the other character, like the friend characters back in. But it also feels really clunky in doing that. Like, it feels like this is something that, like, the events of this issue feel like they should have happened over the course of like 2 or maybe even 3 issues, because there is so much that is just like, or, you know, should have happened over the last 2 or 3 issues rather than waiting to just like dump it all in number 4, because, you know, like the things that are happening are good. Like, I think I like the direction that they're heading in terms of like undermining her trust in the house and bringing all the other characters back into it and like building out the world a little bit more. It's just that it all happens at the same time. And there can be a narrative reason to do that, where it's like, you know, have all these status quo changes happen at once to like really overwhelm the main character. But from a reading perspective, it's just like, it is really overwhelming, and it's hard to like, it's like, this is a book that's been great because like going issue to issue, it's very easy to keep up with what's going on. And this issue introduced so much information that I don't even know that I retained it all between, you know, reading it yesterday, reading it a few hours ago, and talking about it now, right?
Right. Also, the fact that there's, like, maybe some weird government ghost shit going on, too. I don't like that at all. I liked it better when the scale and the scope were smaller.
Yeah.
It's just this band and these friends and this haunted house that's not as good as the one character thinks it is. Like, yeah. There's just enough there for a decent, like, 5 to 10 issue story that when you start entering conspiracy shit, it's like, oh, God, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah. And it could turn out well, but it is, like, I don't know. I don't mind that direction, but it's definitely one that is... Fucking with the scope of this comic is definitely maybe a mistake. Could end up being a mistake.
Yeah.
Similar things going on in Luna number 2 for me. I feel like it's too early for the exposition dump issue of this series.
Yes, totally agree.
I don't want to hear the exposition, but because it feels like it doesn't feel consequential yet. Like, we got the scene where, like, oh, he drugged her at the end of the last issue and they had sex. But there, I still feel like I don't have enough of a grasp for what's going on for this, like, info dump about, like, immortality and chasing, like, the youth elixir to really land for me when, like, so much of what I was hoping this issue would just be, like, building on the character work from issue 1 so that I had a solid footing before we really start. And, like, developing on the mystery and teasing it out a little bit before just doing, like, right. Here's what's going on. Read an essay about what's going on in this comic.
That's my issue, too, where... Yeah, and it's, like, a lot of characters are like, oh, no, like, a lot of characters aren't doing well, but we've only spent one issue with them. And it's not like the Grant Morrison book where, like, hey, we had one issue with them and they were the main focus and they were interesting and it was good. It was like, oh, like, they were just sort of existing around. And it wasn't really an issue the first time where we got to, like, know any characters all that well. It was mostly just, like,
You got, like, little hints of their personality, but nowhere near enough to be like, oh, these people are in crisis and I care about that, you know?
So in this issue where we're sort of like, oh, they're not doing too well. Uh-oh, why aren't they doing too well? It's like, well, this is a bit too early for me to care that they're... I mean, like, there is a sense of, like, oh, like, sure.
Yeah.
It's not all that strong. Like, it's just like...
It's an issue that, like, if there were two issues in between issue 1 and this issue, I would probably be like, yeah, I really liked this issue, but it's just a pacing problem. But I'll be back for more. I mean, the first issue was so strong that, like, I do want to see where it goes. I just wish that it had saved this a little bit. That's about everything, right? I don't really have anything to say about Batman Urban Legends number 1 or Children of the Atom number 1.
What about Spectre and Spectres?
What?
Oh, I guess no one else is reading Spectre and Spectres.
No, I don't.
I was not on the show for the first issue that came out because it was during the 2 weeks that I was gone. But it's a Boom Studios comic, and it's really cute. It's about, like, a group of kids who are kind of, like, trying to be... They're trying to, like... They have, like, a YouTube channel, and they're trying to be, like ghost hunters on YouTube. And...
Man, this sounds fun.
It's really cute. I think you would like it. It's, like, three, like, college-age kids, or, like, young adults, and, like, a 15-year-old, and, I don't know, it's really cute. I liked it. Issue 2 came out this week, and it was good. It was good fun. There's the main crux of the plot right now is that one of them in issue 1, when they were checking out a haunted place, one of them got possessed by, like, a demon, and so they're having to figure out, like, how to fix this problem with the demon being, like, possessing their friend, and the demon tells them, in issue 2, the demon tells them that, if they help him find his name, that he will release their friend from being possessed, and so they're, like, at the library trying to research, figure out, like, what this demon's name might be. I don't know, it's cute. I think you guys would like it if you or I think John would like it if he checked it out at least. And Alex is pretty amenable. I don't know about Chad. Chad can be crotchety. Yeah, it's issue 2 that came out this week. So, pretty easy to catch up on. It's a Boom Studios comic.
Glad we're getting into Boom this year.
Yeah.
I always keep Boom on my radar, mostly because I'm the only person here who tends to read, like, licensed, like, TV and movie comics. But this, I don't know if this is based on anything. I think it's just a comic.
Boom has, I think it's the Boombox imprint. I don't know if they still call it that, but it's like where all the YA comics, I mean, Lumberjanes and Giant Days were both published under that label.
Yeah.
And they all sort of have that, like, Steven Universe, like, visual style, but better because it's a comic and not animation. And those are always, like, they're, like, hit and miss for me personally, but, like, the ones that hit really hit, and basically all of them are pretty well liked, so, I mean, I don't, and this definitely sounds like something that falls into that, that realm.
Yeah.
Same for, like, Proctor Valley Road. Like, I don't know if it is, if they're technically under that imprint, or if that imprint even exists anymore, but they definitely feel, like, spiritually part of that, and
I don't see anything about, like, Boombox or anything on the Boom Studios page for it. So
okay,
I definitely do remember that branding though.
Yeah, it might have gone away really quickly.
Yeah, it's like when was it Black Crown had their imprint and then they just
you look at the Boom. It is still the imprint.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And Spectre and Spectres is in fact under that imprint.
Hmm.
My brain. Sometimes I retain information about comics, and it comes in handy.
And so it's not often, but
yeah, that's true. That's true.
But cool. We're at an hour 6.
I think we can wrap it up. Yeah.
I think that was the only other thing I read.
I vote against wrapping it up, but I respect Chad enough that I will.
Well, if you want to continue talking to me, we can play video games after this. Until next week, y'all know where to find us. You should follow us on socials and rate and review us on iTunes or whatever you get your podcasts. You should follow us individually on Twitter. Alex is at Alex Hanziak. I'm at Mountain Dew Liker. Chad is at InOnAband, and Emily is at MPandanata. That's probably the easiest way to find the things we do. Chad's got a new short story dropping. I don't know if it'll be public or published publicly, but if you want to read his old ones, you can go to inonim.wordpress.com, inonim.bandcamp.com, all that good stuff. And you can find Emily's podcasts. They are called Imagine Me and Yuri Kuma, and also The Fresh Podcast Market. And you can read Alex's upcoming review of Apex Legends for the Nintendo Switch, which is not going to be a positive one. TGMagOnline.com. Although it might be a positive one. The core game's good. Apex, like, is a really good game. That port sucks ass, though. So, yeah. But it was, you know, thanks for listening. Talk to you all next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.